Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime, from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
R.I.P. Jojo.
And it's me, a very tired and sweaty Brian. And this, I can't attest to the tiredness and sweatiness of my cohorts here. I suspect they may also be in a similar state.
No, just tired. I've dressed for to be cool. So, yeah.
I've dressed to be cool. That's not helped. So, we are talking the anime that aired between the week... The anime that aired the week of... It's been a while since... Get this right. We are covering the anime that aired the week of Monday, the 19th of August, through to the 25th of August, with the solitary sole exception of an episode of Star Twinkle Pretty Cure, which happened the week before.
I'll catch up.
It used to be Bono Bono, we have to say that about.
Which I still miss, fucking Crunchyroll, yes. You fucks.
Oh yeah. Speaking of things, R.I.P.
You don't think I fucking scroll up and see if there's new episodes every now and again? I fucking do.
Yeah, same here. Did it this week.
Okay, get those guys who are doing the old TV show. But come on, just give us what we need. Come on, fan sub groups. This is literally what you're designed for.
Yeah.
And we kick off with Wacky TV Na Na Na, second season, episode 20, Intrusion, Annoying Amateurs. In which we get two callbacks to jokes from the first series. The two amateurs, the Cyclops and the Minotaur, who showed up in exactly the same episode the previous season. They showed up in episode 20, previous season.
Oh, so these guys are episode 20 plot, just yes. Ready to slot in wherever. Okay.
Well, they could fit in with a castle with an invasion, so kind of spooky.
What were they fighting this week?
They'd gotten the treasure, but a blue hand punched through the wall and stole the treasure chest.
Oh, and it was the
it was the Cyclops. Yeah,
and the Minotaur's there too.
Yeah, he's not doing as much talking, but yeah.
No, he doesn't do any talking in the first season either.
Mm.
In the first season, they're looking for like a cryptid, and they're chasing it around, and they run into these two. Who say that they assure them that they don't want to be on TV, but everything they say indicates, despite their protestations, they would really like to be on TV instead of this actual cryptid they're looking for.
Well, you can't want it too much. You come on too strong. They can sense that. Desperation drives them away.
And in order to get some help, they rig up former pro wrestler Tatsumi Fujinami. Which apparently they did in the first season as well.
They did. He taught him how to wrestle a bear.
except he's a bit busy because he's doing castle tours, and then they get into a long conversation about castle hotels.
That was fucking great, because obviously you keep cutting to the Cyclops and the Minotaur, who are just standing there politely, not interrupting this phone conversation, and they kind of go on tangents, like, yeah, have you ever been to this castle? It's like, oh, that castle's fucking gorgeous. What about castle hotels? Yeah, but, like, all the new hotels, they're all modern and shit. They don't like the traditional, like, wooden castle.
They ain't got no class.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, like, a long sort of, like... It's just non-scripted. Was this recorded before he knew the recording was happening? I'm not fucking sure.
And it turns out the castle that he's currently out on tour in is the castle they're in. He's literally across the way from them.
Yeah, he's on the same balcony as them.
wearing the same jumper he was wearing on the cover of his theme song's single. Which I recommend.
Very nice jumper.
Yeah, seeking out the single and also listening to it. Apparently it's co-written by Eddie Grant, but I don't know whether that's just because one of these cases where it sounds a little too similar to an Eddie Grant song, so they've got to
say co-written
give him a
there.
Credit. But also, he sings it himself, and he is terrible at singing.
Nice. That's what the people come for, though, right?
Yes.
Hmm.
And so that's kind of where we leave it. But Tatsumi Fujinami is going to help them out. In getting the safe back off these annoying amateurs.
You would hope through wrestling, but based off this show, I assume I'm going to be disappointed with that, but also amused.
Yeah.
You know, they pulled it off last time. But that was a bear, though, which is pretty big. It's not as big as these two fellas. Yeah. That's what I'm going to see. But the AD went for that to like, get his arms around there really all the way around if he's going to pull this off.
It's worth pointing out that Tatsumi Fujinami is a human being.
Yes, he's not a banana man or anything, no.
Talking bananas and mole women.
It's a troubling precedent then for this dimension to live in.
Yeah. Well, they do seem to be edible and whatnot, but also the thing is, he doesn't refer to them by name, he only calls them that crappy TV station or something like that. Yeah. Just insults.
You know, must have even like BoJack Horseman universe where you can have,
regular
human beings. Well, more like a Tuca and Birdie universe where you can have like vegetable people and also regular human beings and also animals.
Next on the list, let me go through my list again. I've got a fly crawling up my leg.
Episode 10.
It's the girl next door episodes. So the demon girl next door. It wouldn't be exciting if it was just called the girl next door, but I imagine there probably is a manga somewhere just called that.
Probably.
Episode 7, and this one is called The Pink Method, The Wheel of Fate is a Round Tire. But also, Dwayne watched two other episodes from earlier in the season.
I have to catch up.
What brought you back into the fold?
Episode 3, Nightmare or Forebear, The Doorstep of Darkness Descends.
Mm-hmm.
And Sharpen Your Mind, The Newly Awakened Powers of the Magical Girl. So, Dwayne, you start.
Well, I got back into them, Niall, because I feel like I didn't give it enough of a shot when I gave Bem and freaking Copcraft like way too much of a chance, I feel like. I was like, okay, come on, guys. I'll give you another shot. And they failed me every fucking time in some regard. And I was like, this was all right. I could just give this another go. So I'll get through these. Let's see. So I can catch up and I'll be catching up as well in the next ones, I presume. episode 3, Nightmare of Forebear. She has a dream where her ancestor demon, is like, hey, it's me, your ancestor. You probably remember me from that last dream. And it's like, well, how can you be my ancestor? You're blonde. And she's like, don't worry, we've been all over the place. We constantly travel to many different lands and we've changed over the years. And it's like, have you ever actually won a battle? And your one's like, do you like how I decorated this dream? It's quite tasteful, don't you think? And it's like, okay, I see you avoiding the question, but she's like, okay, you need to write down every important thing I'm telling you, because you'll forget as soon as you wake up, because this is a dream. And kid's like, yeah, no bother. And as soon as she wakes up, she's desperately searching around the house. She only gets called out of her vision by her mom saying, pancakes for breakfast, even though it's like 5 o'clock in the afternoon or something. I hope it's a weekend. Anyway, and the mom's like, oh, you're writing things down. Would you write down my shopping list for me? And by doing this, she forgets. She only writes down like half the shopping list mostly. And still doesn't remember the dream very well, so that's not really much good. She tries to figure out how to make a projectile weapon because she realizes she's going to get her ass handed to her if she tries to fight Momo like barehanded. And Momo gives her some advice and takes her to like an abandoned factory that she blew up years ago in some climactic battle. But she owns it now, because, you know, she does well for herself. But all she can manage to summon is, like, she's like, okay, you gotta say, like, a phrase, and her one's like, magical, creamy, love, something, you know, it's like, she's embarrassed about her magical phrase. But, Shamiko, she, like, eventually tries a bunch of things, like, I wanna eat a big dinner, or something like that, you know, and eventually, like, I want everyone to be friends. And that managed to summon her special attack, which is this tiny little ball of energy that Momo says is like, well, that about the size of that one, that looks like it would hurt about as much as an intramuscular injection. And it's like, that does hurt, but that's not really like your finishing attack, right, really. But it's so weak that it's very slowly floating forward and then starts floating back to Shamiko because it's trying to get back to its master. It doesn't really have much force behind it. And eventually he does get her, and he feels like she just got an injection. Episode 4, Sharpen Your Mind. They're kind of looking at her weird idol thing that she's put in like a tea cozy because it looked nice, and she doesn't want it to break when it drops. And Momo notices that there's a switch at the bottom of it, and I was like, that's just making that thing look more and more like a dildo. But she flicks the little switch on the bottom of it, and that turns off Shamiko and pulls her into her ancestor's dream dimension, where she can hang out in her filthy, her ancestor's now addicted to cola after pulling it out of her dream. That's another thing. But, yeah, she's got like a little table there with the blanket on it, and she can watch TV. She's got all the channels, play video games. It's a pretty sweet setup. While her ancestor takes over Shamiko's body and uses the full extent of her powers, which is like nothing because she's a poor little weakling, and she actually injures her in the process, apologizes, and actually thanks Momo for, oh, you actually got her stronger. I suppose I should be thanking you, but I still want to destroy you and coat the idol in your blood. And for that, Shamiko gets to go to hot springs because they figure, oh, she needs to relax and chill out. But she does owe Momo more money now, so she has to get a part-time job selling freaking Frankfurters that are cut into the shape of octopuses at a particular stand, and ends up meeting Momo that day and working really hard. But even though the boss promised, if you sell a lot of them, I'll give you a pack of hot dogs to take home with you. And she convinced Momo so well that she actually powered up Momo by accident, which is, she was kind of regretting. Momo buys all the hot dogs, and there's no hot dogs left for her to bring home. So once again, she's been foiled by the curse. That's those two episodes.
Phew. Whereas in episode 7, it opens again with a dream, in which the events of the previous 6 episodes are recapped.
Damn it!
they're not. Because
Lilith
just starts making stuff up, and there's like a bit where and then in a great bit of action, the camera span around in a 360 degree arc, which was just Momo and some of those wieners cut into octopus shapes. Shamiko, Yuko, whoever's calling her. Everyone now calls her Shamiko, don't they? Shamiko, rather. Yeah. Yells at her for just making stuff up. But then you discover that something has changed in episode 6. So Momo's ill. She's also lost some of her magical ability due to something that they did in the previous episode. Which has also now enabled the budget to be lifted on the family, so they'll be...
Oh, the 400 yen a month curse.
Yes, so they're having a big party at the start of this episode.
Oh, the mother does say in that prior episode, it's like, wait, how the fuck can you afford to feed us and shit like that? And it's like, apparently the curse doesn't cover the cost of the school supplies or, like, medical bills. So they're good. It's just like, you have to, food-wise, you have to live off 400 a month, yeah.
And Lilith can now talk through the statue.
Okay.
Which then leads her to try and drink a highball in a can through the statue, where she instantly gets drunk, and then the mum puts her in a sake bath, and so she's just... Throughout the first half of the episode, she's absolutely rat-assed, and then the second half of the episode, she's absolutely hungover.
Oh, that sounds great.
Meanwhile, Yuko's worried about Momo not eating properly. And then, while they've got all this food, they realise, oh, there was an electrical cut, and that's blown out the motor in the fridge, freezer, and they can't store any food, so they've got to try to eat it all. And they're like, Mom, that's not how human beings work. You can't just eat all the week's food now and then not need to eat for the rest of the week.
Just watch me.
So she ends up taking the food round to Momo's to keep in her fridge, but also to make sure she eats better so she can recover from this cold. And then the second half, it's some more training. She wants to get her to drag a giant tire off, it's not just any tractor, it's like a giant sized tractor wheel.
Oh, like a steamroller type thing, is it?
Yeah, and she explains that when you make a pact with the Light Clan, then you suddenly become super powerful. You don't actually build your muscles up or anything. You're just using the magic to become super strong. But then they point out, well, you just had your magic drains, so how are you still lifting that tire? And she's like, oh, that's due to my muscles.
Oh, I do work out
though. Anyway, Anri, the other friend, comes along and, like, kind of manipulates the pair of them into not doing, like, this super muscle training, but, it's like, we've got to train her minds to make her more resistant to your magic and various things. And we get a little bit more character thing in that we learn that, despite what Momo said earlier, she does have a family member, which she describes as like a non-blood relative sister, which looking at the wiki is actually the sister-in-law. And these particular strawberry buns remind her of, because they're basically like trying to make each other more courageous by facing their fears. And so she sends Yuko to go and fetch these buns. Go and fetch two buns. And it turns out it was all a trick to actually make her do some running to go and get these buns before they all sold out. But then it turns out she is afraid of these buns because it reminds her of her sister-in-law for reasons we don't know yet. And they eat them and the bond. And meanwhile, then Anri comes back and with the job that she'd like alluded to earlier in the episode, which is she wants Yuko to cover as a character mascot for the shop she works at. And it's all going well until these small children start harassing her. And she almost falls into a fountain when she's saved by a woman we've never seen before, but is dressed very much like a magical girl. And this is where Yuko remembers from an earlier episode when Momo warned her that if they're going to start using their powers, then it's going to start attracting other people to this area of town.
That was why she wanted to train her with that the ranged special attack thing, because it's like, okay, if a real magical girl finds you, she's going to kill your ass.
Yes.
Whereas I'm a big softy, like, you don't have to worry about me.
That's where the episode ends, is she's just been saved by another real magical girl.
Mm.
But she's panicking because she's like, can't let her find out that inside this cat costume, there's a girl with a very long pointy tail and horns. But yeah, there's, but the statue looks even more phallic in this episode. In various ways. But that's literally the only slightly lewd thing about the show.
That's basically it. Like, the fact that that thing's probably some kind of dildo. Other than that, the show's fairly innocent. I know that sounds like that's enough to stop it, but that's, I feel like that's the joke that the adults are going to get, no one else, basically.
It's going to like hatch at the end of the series and then something else even more lewd inside.
Like, I did appreciate in the dream sequence where Shamiko invades Lilith's dream, that Lilith is like wearing like her sweats and shit. She's not wearing the weird fucking gothic Lolita sexualized fucking shit. And even then, when she changes to be in her full form, she's wearing like a demonic version of the sweatpants part of the costume because she can't find the lore part. I was just like, yeah, okay, this show isn't actually, it's not like, these are the kinds of things magical girls wear, but also in their off time, they just, you know, they just wear comfortable shit around the house. It's fine.
Well, you can't just do the whole transformation bit as soon as you walk in the house from work, you know.
Yeah, yeah, you want to chill a bit, like, obviously.
I mean, you can't get plenty of space in an apartment this size. This economy can't be transforming indoors.
Like, I'm kind of enjoying the friendship and the camaraderie that's kind of coming between the characters. Even though they're constantly like, I'm training specifically to murder you. It's like, totally, yeah, do it, brother. You know? it's good. It's fun.
Yeah, Anri comes up with a nickname for Lilith as well. Which you can't remember. It's like, it's an abbreviation for like,
oh, it's
Shamiko ancestor or something.
Shamiko ascended, so it's Shami Sen, I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a weird, like, oh, that'll be your nickname, your cute nickname for a demon lord.
And there's more stuff with the, like, now Lilith can talk to the mum and the other sister. There's like, she realizes.
The other sister is like making all kinds of plans. Yeah.
And like Lilith's trying to like promise, once I'm free, I'll give you America to the little sister.
You can keep it.
Yeah, that's pretty much what. And Lilith's like frightened of the mum now after she got her drunk immediately. She suddenly realized, even though she can talk, she knows her place in the family home still.
Yeah, it seems like the Lilith knows the mem, so I wonder if the mem got out of this curse somehow or figured out how to control this weird magical idol. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently the dad is a character in the show at some point, so. We shall see. But yeah, this may be the thing I watch now instead of JoJo's each week.
Okay.
Because it's pretty good. Next up is Dr. Stone. Episode 8, Stone Road. I take it back what I said about last week. This is where the show resembles what the thing is. Now, because
this is the formula, the literal formula they're going to kind of start a bottle from here on out.
How can I make them come over to my dark side, which is actually the good guy side?
But also like flowcharts of how to make things.
Yeah. And
I love the flowchart. That was great.
And all like the conspiratorial conversations between two characters talking about another character that
who's also there, or
yes, who's also there, or just out of hearing or asleep.
Okay.
And the fact that it's so many different combinations throughout the episode. And also I like the fact that now we're getting into like the extreme facial reactions, that it's being matched with extreme acting reactions to go along with it.
When your one said, it's like, you look like a villain, I was thinking, like, I was literally thinking that when he made that kind of, like, evil grin. Ah, brilliant.
This is face. Resting villain face.
Yeah. So, Senku lays out his plan, which we get in a nice big full screen splash, as opposed to the sand drawing that he's given for Chrome's benefit. Of all the steps we need to get to make sulfur tablets, because that explains, like, yeah, while we could try and get penicillin, it's going to be...
Penicillin would be better, but it'll take longer because you're just going to be experimenting for so long.
Yes.
So you're better off starting with the mineral version, yeah. Because minerals are easier to find than specific mold.
And, yeah, first step is iron, and luckily it turns out that Chrome is showing off this compass that he's made. And he's disappointed that Senku again knows exactly what it is. But there's all these clues throughout the episode of, like, things you'd think these Stone Age people wouldn't know the names of. And I like the fact that Senku gets picked up on this episode.
He picks up a reference to, like, well, not so much fiction, but legend. But still, it's just like, okay, I get how he could find a magnet and experiment with it and that kind of shit. That's fine. I get that this person understands that, hey, the North Star isn't north like you said it is.
Yeah, also as well, he's picked up by, wait a minute, you guys keep dissing Kohaku and calling her a gorilla. How the hell do you know what a gorilla is?
Yeah.
Yes, but it's Momotaro, which sets it all up. He has to bring it up once they say Momotaro. And he's like, you don't know Monster Hunter, but you know Momotaro. And then he gets their version of Momotaro.
The Fist of the North Star version? That was fucking class. I want to watch that show.
Yeah, so it's in our story to pass down to our people. Like, as God said to Boruto's dad, he must kill his son Boruto, but Boruto's dad said no.
And we learn that they get all these lessons from Ruri. And then Senki's like, I'm very interested in Ruri now. And Chrome's like, what? No! Kohaku has to, like, have a word with Senku to explain that Chrome's got a crush on Ruri.
And they both sort of, like, together, I think that's the thing you're talking about, where they're both like, oh my god, he's so obvious, that's still not going to work, that kind of thing, when he's right fucking there.
Yes, and also the thing of the two boys making Kohaku do all the work. But then luckily they find somebody who's much closer to the ground, who can pick the iron up with the magnet far easier than they can, and that is the new member of the crew, the great detective Suika. Who is one of the best characters in the comic.
Yes. Oh, yeah? She is an adorable child who wears a melon, like, rind or melon husk over her head like a helmet.
Yes.
And can disguise herself as a melon.
Yes.
By just pulling her entire body into that.
Yeah, she's a very talented contortionist.
I wasn't quite sure what the voice was going to be, but it's not super cute. It's probably less cute than Tama in One Piece.
Yeah. It's just kind of screechy enough. It isn't going like full on like baby talk. It's just like, ah, but I'm a little rascal. Woohoo!
Yeah, he's supposed to be 10, isn't she? If I remember correctly. So she's not that young. Yeah, and so they're going to try. They try and melt some iron, but between the four of them, they don't have enough strength to use the bellows to get the temperature hot enough.
Because you got to keep it going for like what 30 hours or something.
Something like that. Yes.
Yeah. Some like staying up late, fucking thing, or doing it in shifts.
So they send Sarika into the village to spy on everybody to find out what they can use to bribe people to help them out.
Yeah, because they realize the
hierarchy of needs, man.
They've nearly got. Oh crap! Is it Jin and Tin? No, that's not it.
Kinro and Ginro.
Yes.
Kinro and Ginro. I couldn't think of the gold and silver. Yeah, they've nearly got those motherfuckers. And it's like, okay, if we can just skew them over a little bit more, and also figure out what other people want, because we need a lot of people to make this stuff.
Yeah, I did like it was just the fact that Ginro saw they were busy doing something, and he thought he should be part of it.
Yeah.
Was the first thing, and then the second thing was like, oh, and maybe they could make my spear nice and shiny like yours, brother. Because as the series goes on, Ginro is the butt of everybody's jokes.
Aw.
don't feel sorry for him.
Okay, fair enough.
He brings it on himself.
Yeah. Mm. There's a scene which is, probably won't even be in this season, but there's a scene which is a parody of a scene from part 5 of JoJo's.
Oh, okay.
Which came enough weeks after it had aired on the anime that made me wonder if they came up with it after seeing it in the anime.
Oh, that was a good episode. I'm putting that in.
The main thing they come to the conclusion is that food's the best bet because they can at least.
Yeah, there's one guy who's sick of fish, and there's three women, one of which wants the three prettiest girls in the village,
yeah,
I think
the three
one
sisters,
said.
Because they complain that the three sisters all with different tastes, and yet between them, none of them have got boyfriends.
That's their major complaint, yeah. But one of them does want someone who can feed them, and is like, so food maybe is the way to go, since that hits multiple people's wants.
Yes. So he reinvents ramen.
I initially thought he was going to make bread or something. I was like, okay, he's getting grain. And I was like, what is he doing? And I was like, oh yeah, ramen. That's the way to get to someone. Good thinking.
Foxtail ramen. I do like the gag of the fact that the villagers think it's the most delicious thing they've ever tasted. And then we get when Senku eats it, he is just absolutely disgusted by it.
It's got like a bitter aftertaste. It's really gritty and shit. It's just like, it doesn't have the texture of ramen that he's used to, but it's like, to them, it's fucking amazing.
This is some Wagamama shit right here.
What is this? Yeah. But I mean, like, once he gets them into the kingdom of science, then they can start actually, you know, picking out grain and getting the good stuff rather than using the, foxweed, they call it, isn't
it? Foxtail, yeah.
Foxtail,
grass greens.
So like basically like grass wheat, if anything else, yeah.
It's Chalk's favorite toy, as Suika explains.
Mm.
Chalk is the dog. And yeah, so it ends with Chrome and Senku rolling up to the opposite end of the bridge outside the village with their new ramen cart.
They are skipping a considerable amount of time to. I do like that.
It's good that there's like Suika being able to conceal her entire body inside a melon gourd. When he goes cartoonish at the right points.
Yeah, and rolling across the bridge as well, as if that's part of the subterfuge.
Oh yeah, is it like the Mr. Do sound effect? I think. Because that has, like, rolling apples in it. That's what it reminds me.
I don't fucking know.
It sounded like a specific sound effect.
Yeah. When you mention it now, I'm just kind of like, fuck. Actually, that might be from...
Just dug out from an old stock audio library.
Yeah. Or at least meant to be evoked anyway. That would be an interesting one. Yeah. The comedy's good. I really enjoy you're thrust into the Stone Age. What do you do? With your knowledge of, it's like, okay, we want to get penicillin, but you know that's too hard, so we'll do it this cheap way. We want to get ramen, so we'll do it this way. But we are going to make the cart. We got to go the whole hog on this.
Yeah. Well, it's just a weird steps you go. You think you'd invent something in, like, you know, the combustion engine or something like that. Like, you know, no, I'm just going to go straight to a radio controlled drone, just go to invent, like, satellite communications, before you get as far as, like, central heating or plumbing or anything like that.
It's kind of fun, like I said, with that whole, like, kind of getting back to basics idea I see in a lot of different media, like the Minecraft idea. It's you don't go straight from, like, from iron to steel to thing. It's like, no. First you get the ram and then you get the iron.
Then you get the women.
Well, the ramen is hopefully going to attract some of the women.
Then you get the power.
It's really fun. I'm quite enjoying it.
And then we've got, if he can find his spreadsheet, Fire Force. If I can find my voice, might be the other problem. Fire Force Episode 7, The Investigation of the First commences. So, the 5th and the 8th are allies, now.
They have a barbecue.
They have a barbecue. My favourite bit is when Arthur's been told by, the Spectacles guy to destroy any attempts that, Mackie has of playing with fire.
I also enjoyed all the guys kind of going like, he's like, yes, here you go, perfectly cooked barbecue. I have perfect control over the flames. They're at the right temperature for cooking. Enjoy it, my good friends. And it's like, all these guys are terrified of this motherfucker now. So they're all just having to accept it off him, yeah.
But the key is we learn why the 5 have been so secretive is because she discovered that someone is manually making infernals.
Mm. And the most manually made in the most infernals are showing up in District 1.
Yes.
Whereas the first district where the ones seem to be the closest to the church.
Yeah. I believe so. Because their thing is actually a cathedral, isn't it?
Yeah, which you kind of would think, thinking back, would that have anything to do with what happened at the convent all those years ago? Is this somebody on the inside of there, perhaps?
Yeah, was it a manufactured combustion, a practice to make infernals or something?
Sorry, I'm talking to the fly, which is now on the other leg. so their plan is that it's like this, transfer procedure where they can send rookies to go and train with other divisions. And so they're going to send Shinra and Arthur to go and spy. But in order to make it look less suspicious, they're also going to send a guy from the 5th and a guy from the 2nd.
To make it look like they're just getting all the rookies trained in the different stations, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it is like they say it like it's a spy mission, basically. Get in, see what you can find out.
And I do like the slight differences in the uniforms. It's like the 8s look very much like a school uniform with their school uniform hats on. Whereas the 1st look like priests, don't they?
Tabards and such.
It kind of reminds me of, do you remember when, it was the Morrison quietly run on X-Men and they all wore the black leathers, but everyone wore it differently, that kind of way?
Yeah.
They have a uniform, but they're all wearing it the way they would. Like, it kind of individualizes them, despite the fact they're all wearing essentially the same thing.
Yeah. And Okubo, it seems to be like a favorite thing of his to do was have a priest dude wearing headphones again.
Yeah.
There was that guy that in Soul Eater as well.
So the first guy they meet is this guy, Cream, who is very bad at insulting people.
I really enjoyed that as a character thread. There's some fucking anime as shit tropes in this, but I really enjoyed that one. It's like, I bet your shit is like shit, you shit. Wasn't that his first insult or something?
Something like that.
Sorry, Captain, I left my thesaurus at home.
You got the ass of an ass, you ass. It's like, and Arthur's like, you what?
You?
And he's like, he's just saying your ass is an ass. That's not an insult. Don't get riled up on it.
I do like later on where he does his power, where they suggest something that his power is, and he goes, that's ridiculous. And then his explanation is even more ridiculous than the thing they thought he could do in the first place.
I mean, like,
place.
His explanation is the thing they thought he could do, but it is more varied, like, it's through another method that you guys didn't think of. That's weird. Yeah.
It's so hot that it's cold.
But yeah, what happens is Shinra challenges them.
to a training exercise.
To a training exercise, and if they win, then they'll answer his questions.
Mm.
And so then that gives us a chance to meet these guys, and also this it's the bubble guy is with us, but he doesn't really get much to do. It's the guy from the second. What was his name? Takaru.
Guy with his massive fucking arms. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, big coat, bit of a whiz, bit of a wimp, but has untapped potential. They didn't use to the fullest, it seems.
He was just freaking out the fact that he was making gigantic fire missiles all around him.
Because his thing is, he became a fireman to put fires out because he's afraid of fire.
Alright, sneeze and just like launch a warhead into the nearest cafe. My life was a nightmare.
So he goes up against, Reku, isn't it? It's the priest with the stars in his eyes.
It sounds like a song.
Krista Berg's latest.
And the energy of a shonen protagonist.
Yeah, yeah. I believe he's one of those guys who believes him to be the main guy, yeah.
Yeah, and all he does when, Takaru launches missiles, when he gets too hot and flustered, his missiles launch out of his, surroundings, is that Reku just dodges them all, and so that's when we see Cream's power, where he basically, as it turns out, it appears that he turns them into ice, but what he actually does is he turns fire into sound, which then using his trumpet, or tuba, or whatever he's got, then he then converts the sound into ice.
Well, I get like, yeah, that energy can now be created and destroyed and just turned into another form. I'm not sure it's really how it works. It's some fucking energon cube kind of business there.
Yeah, I think it's more like a dazzler situation where it turns sound into light. He turns fire into sound into ice. It's not something, so it's no way does he turn fire into ice. It's like, yeah, but you do, but with sound somehow.
I turn it into a really cool tune. Get it?
I think he turns it into sound, and then that device turns it into ice.
Turns it into ice, yeah. That's where the energy goes, because other than that.
But yeah, it makes less sense than just being able to turn it into ice, because at least that's some sort of thermal energy control. Turn it into sound is ridiculous. Also watching this is, our worst character of the show.
Oh, yeah.
She's not too bad at this.
At least she was stopped by the star guy. I was like, okay, I like this character more now because he stopped her from glomping on someone.
She runs in and just kicks Shinra in the ass as she walks past.
That was alright. I did like that bit. It was just so petty.
At least if people are pointing out, you know, you're just like doing the whole, oh, I fell onto you, this routine, like the design by committee character you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Takaru's also got like a really strained pun, around potatoes.
So his nickname is like Potato.
Yeah, it's like Potato Noto, which sounds like Jagannoto, which sounds like Juggernaut.
Because he's a huge big guy with massive arms that shoots missiles, and your man's like, of course, the Juggernaut, what a perfect name for such a powerful man.
Don't punch me, not in the face.
Well, yeah, except he's tall, but he's not as big as he looks when he's wearing his uniform, because presumably, because
it's
he's
a
so,
big jacket,
so
yeah.
afraid of fire, like the captain. Who has no powers, he's wearing that amount of fire protection. It's a good look, though, because I like the way it, like his collar is so far up and closed that it covers his...
Well, I just like this, for more fact that they are, like, all the squads, you know, wear, like, you know, the big jackets when they're out in the job, except for worst character who just, like, has it all undone all the way down so you can see everything. So how's that going to protect you in a fucking inferno, but... Yeah, it's like, this is like a fantastical anime show, but guys fighting each other with fire powers, but it's also practical. It's like, this is what an actual firefighter would wear going into a blaze.
And you have the difference of like the guys wearing it with the collar up, or you have Arthur wearing it with the hood up, because it's more nighty for him, that kind of thing.
That's cool.
The remaining priest guy refuses to fight.
Yeah, himself and the bubblegum guy. Like, I don't like the fight for no reason. The bubblegum guy's like, you guys already saw my ability in the last episode, so I'm good. Yeah, I'm gonna sit out.
And the captain steps in. Captain Burns.
So yeah, he is third generation as well. So that generational thing, it might be like, okay, there's probably more of a gap in it than I thought there was.
Yeah, I think it has to do with the powers, not necessarily your age.
Yeah, I thought it was to do with the age, because obviously the two new guys were both third generation, whereas the people who are already in the fire department were second. And I was like, oh, okay, hold on. How does that work?
No, yeah. Because I believe one of the other captains is the bald guy. He's third generation, who produces fire out the top of his bald head, spot on his head.
Okay.
Yeah, Leonard Burns. Yeah, and he goes at it with Arthur and Shinra.
He manages to stop Arthur's blade, like, just straight up against his arm.
That shouldn't work.
I'm not sure how he's doing it, but it seems like he's, like, moving the flame around, because, like, when Shinra does, like, a flame kick on him, the explosion is behind him, rather than, it just burns his shirt, but it doesn't harm him whatsoever. But yeah, I'm not sure of the specifics of his power yet.
Yeah. Let's see. Besides, like, turning fire into ice, or fire into sound, whatever like that, they're not, like, averse to, like, using natural scientific principles to do things like Guy Cabana's thing, or just, like, where it raises the temperature inside your body so your brain just shuts down. And,
yeah.
To supply something in like, there, but he's, like, generating some kind of temperature in his body, so it cancels out any kind of heat that is going to attack him. But it'll still burn his clothes, but it won't harm him, because he's kind of canceling it out somehow.
Yeah. I thought maybe he was just moving it from his own body, that kind of way. But like you said, there's some variations you seem to be able to do with your power.
Or just stand, because with this being a David production, you just, like, he's punching the lads and you hear him, like, total, like, stand or ripple sound effects being implemented there when he does so. It's nice.
And he's the obviously the thing, a visually impressive thing of him being able to take the guys down with barely any movement from himself. I do like how, like, he like cuts Shinra down and, like, wanted to be a hero, like, say, you've got a long way to go, but then he's like, hope you enjoy your time here at the first.
Yeah, he keeps it professional. It's like, well, that's the end of the training exercise. I totally fucking kicked your guys' ass without even trying. And these guys will show you around and be happy to answer any questions that you need.
And then when Cream comes and compliments them, and Arthur's like, yeah, of course we did great. But you still can't understand the weird, like, repetitive nature of Cream's dialogue. That's pretty much it.
Only thing we're skipping is, I enjoyed a lot of this episode, was there was a shower scene with all the girls complimenting each other's bodies.
And
I was just like, fucking show. Yeah, you forgot that bit, because that's the bit that you wiped out of your memory to watch the rest of the show, which was quite good.
I don't think
but
that,
they have to put one bit in.
I would say, I think the rest of the episode was so good that it made me forget the bit where I was like, oh, this someone liked Plastic Little.
Yeah, but they have to fucking get one in, don't they? They have to get one pervy fucking thing.
That's just what the guy writes. This isn't coming out of nowhere. He does that in his comics.
I know, but I'm so disappointed, I guess, because the rest of the show, like a lot of his other stuff, is so good that it's like, if you just didn't have this one thing. It's because of that, you can't really recommend the show to people. It's like, okay, you gotta watch out for this thing, though.
Yeah. Well, I think it's why I do enjoy it. It's fairly rote in a lot of ways, but doesn't have enough interesting things, and it often looks well enough that I want to come back and see more.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'd love to be able to, like, without any stipulations, like, recommend this, but that's the problem of it. That's my only problem with it. Other than that, I'm really enjoying the show.
It's getting more stained glass windows. Those things always look great whenever they appear in the episode. They do, though. And I love stained glass. Especially animated stained glass.
I do like when they see the obelisk and Arthur says, we can still climb it.
It's incredible how, like, they've established this guy as the dipshit, and yet in the entirety of this episode, like, they're explaining how he turns, like, heat into sound, into ice, and Arthur's just like, or he doesn't understand the guy who's bad at insults, and he doesn't understand what he's saying. He's so bad at talking. He's just Arthur's so stupid. They're keeping it up, and I'm enjoying it, yeah.
Then we've got Pirika Reko-chan, in which this episode she's a detective trying to protect the Hakata Diamond, which turns out to be a type of bun, which is a mixture of Japanese and Western ingredients, from the modern Phantom Thieves from stealing it. I don't know which detective, I know, it's a parody I've seen before, and I can't remember exactly which detective she's dressed up as.
Well, she's like the traditional one, like wearing the traditional Japanese clothes, and then the other guy, he's wearing like a bowler hat.
Yeah, and the episode's
called, I know what that is as well, but I can't think of it.
Hikaru-san is coming through, which I think is also a reference to something. Yeah, and so they lay all these security devices, but it's not good enough for the modern Phantom Thieves, which are the three strawberries, the plastic bento divider, and the cafe owner. But just as they're about to steal the bun, you hear shattering of glass, and then I also like there's a sound effect of a cat meowing, even though there was no cats in this episode. And the way that the great detective, Piri Karako-chan is gonna protect this bun is by eating it herself.
Can't steal it if it's out.
Yeah. And then we see her back home and they decide, yes, these are delicious buns. The end. And then we've got Vinland Saga, episode 8, Beyond the Edge of the Sea, which is a bit strange because that is the chapter title of a chapter which is not adapted in this episode.
Oh.
That's the name of the chapter which was mainly adapted in episode 1.
Now the guy got it in somewhere.
Yeah, I guess they liked the title that much that they had to get it in.
Somewhere beyond the sea.
Well, it makes sense.
That is one of the points in the thing. Yeah, that's what the kind of comes up at the end.
Yes, because it makes more sense when it's in the order it is in the comic, if you have that speech at the end with the thrall of Lord Gorm wondering if there's a place far away where she'd be free, and then that would take us into a place where she would be free, which is the village where Thors lives in Iceland, across the sea, beyond the sea. Yeah, except now we're going to go to a place where that's not the case, which is going to be England in 2013. Oh, not 2013. 1013. Get the right set. Millennium.
Well, I don't know. It'd be that way in fucking 2019. The waitings are gone.
dear.
Heard of her.
But yeah, the bulk of the episode is Gorm complaining to Askeladd that feeding all these Vikings costs too much money. Then we get the duel, where there's like a few moments where Askeladd seems he's underestimated Thorfinn, but in the end...
He's trying to downplay it, where he's like, hey, you've grown up, kid, or hey, I'm going to try and downplay this thing. He's like, okay, I can't talk my way out, let me rile you up instead.
Yeah. Yeah, because part of the thing is, like, he's talking about how Gorm's not... He thinks he's got this useless slave... But he's like, well, the reason you find she's been no use to you is because you're not approaching her properly. Unlike me with Thorfinn,
Thorfinn wants to kill him, and yet he's helped him gain all this fucking wealth.
Yes.
Yeah, but he's like giving him an outlet for that rage, which will be something that, I'm going to go be a Viking pirate dude, but while I'm doing that, getting experience and training, I'll be stronger, and one day I'll completely end up going kill ass guy and get revenge for my dad.
Yeah, but in the meantime, you're making Askeladd rich, so...
Yeah, he's going to do it for so long that maybe he like forget why he was doing this and first he's going to kill Askeladd because he wants to kill Askeladd for reasons. You know, you get that sense that he could do this for so long that it's just a life for him now. He forgets why he even started this at all to begin with.
Yeah, I just got to the bit in the comic where we get Askeladd's backstory, which explains a lot of how he treats Thorfinn, but is like quite emotional, but then finishes on a really silly panel, which I greatly appreciated. And then we move into the England arc, which I'm going to guess is going to be a bulk of the remainder of the series. This takes us having done, I think all of volume one of the US release, and then a little bit of volume two of this episode.
Yeah. There's the winter in Jutland, and, King Swain is on the move. He's got all his boys. He's paired partner up with the Viking raiders. They're going to attack, Britain from two sides. They're going to lay waste to the place. And
yeah,
the
battle is
joined. Then
I don't think they say
London
the
town.
Cities that they take. They just, like, you see them pass as the red lines are working their way through the map. And it, the episode ends with the siege in London, isn't it?
Yes. And Thorkell the Tall makes his appearance in stunning fashion by hurling an axe to
several guys,
four or five people.
War is great, I believe, is his thing.
Yes, because he is defending London from the other Vikings. We also get a glimpse of Canute and Ragnar. And yeah,
you have one of his men saying, "It's like, hey, he's not ready for combat. He hasn't seen enough battle." But it's like, if he wants to be a Viking king, then he's going to have to get in a fight.
Yeah, it's a long time before we actually see Swain's face. In full.
And see his aged hands.
Yes, and his warty cheek in this episode. You get the impression that he does not look well.
No.
Yeah.
Heavy is the head that wears a crown of invading Viking guys. It's a. Yeah, I do kind of have a lot of moments with Thorfinn here. There's like, he's sitting outside away from the house, like, by choice, because, yeah, I'm not like you guys, and that's when I sit out in the boat. And Archie feels more comfortable there because it used to be his dad's boat as well, which I dream of his dad. And, but as much as he tries to distance himself, like, when saying, I'm not like you, you're still doing the same, exact same things as these guys all the rest of the time.
And I mean, like, a lot of the stuff is pointed out to him, like, when she's ordered to go out and bring him some food, she's like, I feel like you're like me. And he's like, I'm not like a slave. And, she's like, I don't know, dude, you seem to not be doing shit you don't want to be doing.
Glad I saw this. I read as far as I have now this week, as in this episode, because then all that stuff with Thorfinn is reflected later on with Askeladd.
Once you get his
full story.
Yeah, but he's sort of, one of his, I guess, outlooks or philosophies in life is that, like, everybody is a slave to something. Like, he says, about his uncle. There's, like, my uncle right there. He's, thinks he's got it all made, but, he is, like, whipping the slave he bought with the money because, like, the money is all he has because it's all he sees. It's all that drives him. So he thinks he's all his money to be his freedom and do whatever he wants, but no, he's a slave to money. Everybody is
a slave to their desires
or something like that. Something like that. Or whether it be something like, you know, revenge or.
So if you know what someone wants, then you can play off them for that purpose, yeah.
Yeah, but also as well as trying to, like, what is true freedom then? Like, how do you rise above your own desires and get past that? And if, like, Askeladd wants to be released from that as well?
Yeah, it was good stuff. I'd be glad now. I'd still think all this... The bit we had here should have been at the start of the show, just as it was in the comic.
You still think that kind of throwing you into the middle of the story and then working its way back to explain how we got here is a better system, yeah?
Yeah.
Let's rewatch the series and then watch this episode first and then everything else in order and you'll be fine. It was a little sad too when Thorfinn is having his dream and he sees his father appear to him in vision, like... Which avenge my death, Simba. I mean, Simba. But in his dream, he reverts back to the child he was when he last saw him alive. And it's just that he's tough and hardened, by he's this hard life of a Viking on the outside, but he's still that same frightened child on the inside.
Yeah.
Mm.
Then we've got Ryusoulga, episode 23, Legendary Ryusoul, which was a Clips episode in the whole. But they get basically, it also was a big push for kids to buy all the Ryusouls, because there's a shot of like all of the ones available on a table. But it turns out the power of Ryusoul is running out of power, so they've got to go and mine another one. They mine another one, which is like basically looking for fossils. And they get one which is a wish one. It's like a multicolored wish one. And they all start fighting over it. Well, first of all, they're like, no, Canelo, you cannot use it to make a woman fall in love with you. That's not a thing a hero would do. Then the little sister turns up, but then Melto realizes that's not the little sister, because the little sister would call me Melty, not Melto. That's Wizaru in disguise. He's after it as well. But then they learn that this dinosaur, because everyone wanted to wish, use its powers to wish, it had withdrawn itself from society. It wanted to commit suicide, as I feared. But they decide that they're gonna grant its wish, and they use the inflatable power up on it, so it just floats off where no one can find it. It was not a very good episode, because mainly it was clips. Mainly it was people saying they would like try to swap their Ryusouls, and they were explaining what each of their Ryusouls did, which meant they could show a clip from an earlier episode. They kind of made fun of it at the start, where Creon was like doing had drawn all like the Minosaurs that they'd made previously, and were re-showing them to Wizaru, but not actually showing the footage, just showing drawings of them. But that was like, I was like, this is going to be a clip show. And then very quickly it was like, this is a clip show.
Mm.
Which I don't think I'd seen in Sentai up to this point. So what's up in Star Twinkle Pretty-Cure, episode 28, The Burning Heart, Flare, the Engineer and Rocket Repairs, Star Symbol.
It's just, I don't know, it's just put a little star, you know, I don't know, is it an emoji, is it an actual thing you can type on your keyboard at the end of it? I don't know, but
I didn't know the shortcut for it, so.
It's their name in the program. In belated Pre-Cure news, they finally get to Fishman Island.
Nice.
To get to the center of the water planet, and to meet like the Smith, if you want to call him, or so that, who was going to repair the rocket, who was a denizen of Planet Plasma, who was like a big ball of fire with angry eyes in the face, and also kind of cool metal gauntlets and things. It's like, isn't it kind of weird that there's a fire, like a fire alien here on the water planet? Yeah, well, that's a story, because like, you know, I'm a guy who's set aside in the dream and said, I had to do it because I got guts. I got a burning heart, man. I got to do it. And you got to show me some of that heart, too, if you want me to fix a rocket for you. So he gets to put the girls to work then. You guys cook coral sirloin steaks to feed into me while I use my flame to try and forge new parts for the ship. And you two, Elena and Monica, you two look pretty sturdy. You work the bellows, like two tiny, like fucking 12-year-old girls. I work in this giant bellows, and they kick them on. Come on! my squid man and octopus man, employees, I suppose, can do it just fine. So you guys should be able to do it too. But obviously, like, no, oh, we can't do it. We're only like from 12-year-old human girls. How can we do this? Like, that's because you ain't got no guts, you ain't got no heart. Until you show me some of that, I won't be able to fix your rocket. So they feel kind of bad for themselves. It's like, you know, oh man, I'm fun. I'm all messing stuff. What do you mean you messed up? You're like the most popular girl in school. You got the archery class, and you're in student council, and at a tea ceremony club. You're so good at school. Well, yeah, but it's a lot of hard work. What about you? You're like, you are always like at home, like helping out your mom and dad with a flower shop, and reminding all your brothers and sisters. It's like, well, think about that in a way. It's like people can see things inside yourself that you don't, you know. There's obviously some us looking in, and maybe shouldn't be getting too down on yourself because you have like strengths and positive points and things that you might be able to see for yourself. And don't, you should be, like, learn to acknowledge them. And don't be too hard on yourself. Especially when Capra turns up, because this is a water plant, he's a Kappa, he's quite strong here. But we're able to fight him off because we got guts. We'll take him out like that. So yeah, nice little, sort of in-betweeny one. And they can fix the rocket. It's all spanking new. Uni, the, Cure Cosmo, the cat girl, manages to resist her urges to, just pounce upon and devour the denizens of Fishman Island, because her being a cat, it's like, haha, I want to eat all the people who live here. And they got reminded, no, please don't do that. We might come back here. We're supposed to be the good guys, remember? But now next time, when I catch up, and you know as well, they finally get to the fireworks factory. They get to go to, Lala's home planet. They get to find out what the deal is with her family and her twin brother, and also her dad, who just looks like her with a mustache on. But what's going on? We'll finally find out. I'll finally find out things that more diligent fans than I have found out, days previous to this recording. But hopefully you will find out too, and hopefully beyond that next time.
Then we've got One Piece episode 899. Defeat is inevitable. The Straw Man's fierce attack. Turns out defeat was not inevitable. Running away was inevitable. It was like kind of hard. I mean, Zoro won the battle, but he was the one more injured because of the stupid powers that's
bullshit fortune cursing crap.
Yes. I think I counted and he was down by like, I've forgotten, it was either 7 or 8 lives by the end of it, which is why maybe he backed off. Is like, I only got like 2 lives left in the bank.
Yes, also
go recruit more guys
because he'd read another card that someone was going to help them to get away, so, which was good because the pair of them were never going to find their way to somewhere safe.
Did like, it's like, hey, Zoro, should we go left or right? And Zoro's like,
You're asking me which way to go.
He picks a direction, then you go the opposite fucking direction, because that's the right way. That's how it works.
Yeah, I do like, it's so much of Zoro is back, because like, was it last week? Episode, it was like one recent episode, it was like, Zoro's an atheist, I forgot that he doesn't believe in gods.
Like, I feel like this is kind of Zoro's arc, and it seems like it's going to tie into a lot of his stuff as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, they keep bringing up as, like, the swords and stuff, and it's like, okay, well, where did he get this shit? And that seems like it's going
to
come up, yeah.
Recent developments in the comics seem to reinforce that, certainly.
And I did like this episode. I know it's like drawing out stuff in the comic, but it's like, hey, remember all those cool moves Zoro had where he could turn his arms super muscly? He just pulls all those out again. That's kind of fun.
Yeah,
he just whirled his sword so fast, you can feel it seems like he's got multiple limbs.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that one. Yeah.
What if he's going to pull it up, but they whip out the bag again?
Probably soonish, I would think. Because he did the giant stepping thing that he did on Oars. He did the gorilla arms. Gorilla 1, Gorilla 2, I think it's just called. I don't think it has a very good name, but it looks cool, I guess. I think he pulled out another old move, but I've forgotten which one now as well.
In general, though, much better pacing this week than last. Yeah. So they defeat Hawkins, though Zoro ends up with one of his nails inside him.
Mm.
Hawkins decides not to follow due to the forecast, and it turns out that, is it Suru,
the tea house owner.
The tea house owner was hiding in the dog's tail.
I did like the way that, like, Zoro's blocking all the shots, and he's like, oh, wait a minute, like, the dog is taking every one of these hits. The dog's just whining constantly.
And, yeah, they've got a herb which will treat the poison from the river.
Yeah, because initially they're like, what? We gotta go to a doctor, not a fucking tea house. And she's like, no, we got herbs for that kind of thing.
And then we see Okabore Town in Kuri, land of Wano. Mm. Where we meet two new characters. Okiku. And what's the sumo wrestler called?
Oh, my brain is just saying Yokozuna. It's like, that's his title, not his job.
Forgot about that guy.
I'm always pleased to see them in the show, because like, I see them in the comic, and it's one thing, and I was like, what fucking mad colors are they going to be?
Yurishiba is the guy.
Right. He's insisting that's like, hey, because she's made some, what is it? Like, they're like a little, it's like a little sweet, for some guy at the tea house.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, this really makes my day. And he's trying to convince her. He's like, hey, marry me and you won't have to work in this crappy thing making leftovers. And she's like, sir, if you're not going to buy anything, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. And he's like, I'm not buying leftovers. Come on.
And then Zoro turns up and basically tells the Sumo guy, who is at least 20 times as big as Zoro, hey, move your fat ass.
Your fat ass is in my way. Move. And he's like, what the fuck did you say? And then Zoro kind of gives him a look with the one eye. And he's like, oh, excuse me, sir. It's good. Because he's basically like the size of the tea house, if not bigger.
Yes.
I think. Yeah.
So then they start treating Otaba. And then we cut to, is it Sachi, Penguin, and Beppo, who are spying on the town. And Beppo's complaining that they can't go into town, and it's like, you're a bear, Beppo. People are going to be freaked out.
He is wearing the claws, he's got a top knot, but he's still very obviously a polar bear or something.
Physically human. He's wearing claws. He thinks he's people.
He is people. And so, yeah, go and tell Law.
That was a very long reveal of Law.
Yes. It's like, who could this possibly be in the spotted hat and the sword?
Spotted hat with the sword with the pluses on it. He has these specific tattoos and symbols.
And also we've just seen his three crew members.
Yeah. One of which is a bear, which is like the only bear we've seen as a crew member. Who could it be?
Hey, it was Law all along.
I guess they did do the slow reveal so everyone go like, ah, shit, it's Law. I love that guy.
Yes, that's exactly why they're doing that.
Yeah, just build up the hype.
Yeah, and then he has an expression on his face as if to say, what the fuck are those two guys up to?
We're driven to plan again. Like, why do I make plans? No one follows them.
And then we get a brief scene on Onigashima where Kaido is getting drunk. While the narrator explains that he is the strongest creature in the world.
Yeah, the narrator also fucking says that he's like, here he is, like, perfectly calm, and his face does not fucking look perfectly calm. He looks pissed as shit.
We just ended on a cool bit of zooming in on his eye, and his eye changes from a human eye to a lizard eye.
Yeah, that was pretty good. There's some good animation in this as well with Zoro versus the straw man thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, next week, more Zoro and Otama and Luffy and Akiko and some more of the beast pirates. Like a weird bat guy shooting arrows. I guess this is... We're going to start seeing just how weird those smile devil fruit get soon, aren't we?
Yeah. It should be good to see in motion.
And also to see how they do the two voices.
I mean, like, I'm going to assume good, because I've heard the dog and baboon, which are clearly just humans... Not even doing like a passable animal impression, just like a guy making barking noises, basically. And it's perfect for it. I wouldn't do it any other way.
I was thinking more how creepy it was going to be when you get the people who always just smile poop and they can't stop laughing. And
oh god, that's going to be creepy as shit.
That's
going to
be messed up when they watch a man get executed.
Yes. Talking of One Piece laughs, that was the thing of when Thorkell showed up and he laughed. And I was like, that's not Zahahaha. What's going on here?
It's a different character. He's a different kind of pirate. He can't use the same laugh.
He's got multiple different laughs. He's a man of many talents.
Very similar voice, though.
The Solid Snake ever laugh? If so, what'd that sound like?
Finally, we've got Gengenge no Kitaro, episode 70, Spirit Affliction, Mysterious Footprints, in which a story which clearly could not be aired Sunday morning was adapted anyway.
Mm. Shadows. It's all... They got the black lung, also the black skin and hands.
Well, you could still make out some of the bits where the limbs and facial features are collapsing in on themselves. That was still pretty freaky.
It was kind of creepier in silhouette, especially when you see the first sort of apparition of it. It's like Kitaro going, "Don't disturb a stone." You'd be like these two guys over here, and then they just dissolve into like some puddle of indescribable mud, which is probably better off not seeing.
This is my least favorite episode of the show so far, though.
Just from the amount of censorship of the gore, I suppose, is it?
Yeah, and I feel like it's like being padded out with the. I'm going to guess the original story is the story with the characters who have a character who looks like a Mizuki character.
Mm. Yeah, and then they walk it all back.
Yes.
They want to show you, it's like, here's how fucking badly you and all of your friends are going to die, but, you know, that would be a pretty messed up way to end this. And I was like, no, Kitaro, you can totally end it like that. That's fine.
You talked before about that guy who stole that one joke. He was totally killed at the end.
Yeah, that was, I guess it's the fact that they left it implied rather than in this episode, they show all of them dying horribly. one guy falls in on himself and gets hit by a truck. So, I mean.
Well, it's a cartoon about ghosts. Seven of them would seem to imply that people die often before their time. It's okay.
Excuse me, I'm yawning and barely awake. So, the ghost.
Wakey.
The yokai this episode is the Titanbo, who is just a rock. Do not anger this rock, for it will kill you. And the main way you can anger this rock is to disobey an edict or chip away at it.
I feel like that's got to be one of the edicts, right? Because that would be like my first one if I was a rock.
I know, but like just not the grandfather disobeys the edict.
And I guess the dad thinks about disobeying it, and that's enough to do it, to inflict an illness on his son.
Possibly, but that may have just been coincidence. That may have,
I thought they said that was related, like he had a moment of doubt where in that moment he was like, I wonder if I could get my son out of this whole fucking cursed situation. And that was enough to put his son in the hospital, so yeah, not great.
It follows, the story is this son doesn't want to be the guardian of this cursed rock. And so he's gonna smash it with his mate. And Kitaro warns them off by telling the story of when somebody else chipped away at this, which were two in, this is where I assume this bit is the straight story because the characters who show up.
Yeah.
Are very, like, they feel very look like Mizuki taking a shot at a particular type of people. These are millionaire's sons who can do whatever the hell they like because their parents are so rich.
And they want to go up to a curse because that seems like it might be interesting.
Yes, and then they're going to experiment on the sample of the rock they take back. And then one of them starts to fall apart. And the other one's like, no, I'm not going to help you. We're not going to take the thing back. I'm going to study you because this might be a space virus or something.
Yeah, he thinks it's in front of your eyes.
The rock is like an unknown material. So he assumes it's like a meteorite or something. And he's like, oh, that must be space germs or something. Yeah.
But then he starts as well, but they take it back. And also basically it's to get money. The granddad let them in to get money to treat the grandson. So the granddad was taken by the rock, and then these two were taken by the rock. And even returning the rock does not sate the rock's desire for revenge. So the other guy just gets dragged underground. And the grandson is not convinced by Kitaro's tale. He's like, ah, phooey. You're just trying to trick me with your tales of curses. I'm going to chip away this rock. And then we see what terrible things happen to him and his mate he's brought with him and his girlfriend and his other mate. All because he chipped away at the rock. But then it turns out it was all the sandwich's hallucinatory sand.
That wouldn't have made me believe him. That would have made me believe him less. It's like, wait, so you made me go on like a drug trip to try and scare me into not doing it?
No, it was a morality tale. It was perfectly legal.
Okay.
I've now seen screenshots of earlier adaptations, and yeah, it's not shadowed out in those.
Oh, he's okay.
Mystery.
And I do wonder if whether the shadowing out here was post rather than during the initial production.
Hmm.
I had to buy the DVDs or to buy the Blu-rays rather to find out.
Yes.
Hmm.
Well, I guess there may well be DVDs of these as well. Because it's aimed at a young enough audience, I suspect.
Right.
DVDs
right.
Probably sell quite well as well.
I got a PS4 probably. You can get a Blu-ray player. Also plays Fortnite whenever you want it.
PUBG in Japan. I believe is still the popular.
Oh, okay.
One. Yeah. Anyway, this is certainly a way to guilt you into staying in your rural township where you grew up in and not move away and go to get a job in the big city.
Mm.
Don't forsake your family's long time tradition, the rest will fucking kill you. The mountain will literally come and find you.
You have to stay in your traditional role and you can't move on from this. I mean, like, your grandfather died so that would happen. So, come on, you gotta do it.
Someone had tweeted some art of the original comic and it is really quite gruesome in comparison to what we got here.
Let's see. Hey, do it.
It looks like the guy with the salaryman face gets the worst of it.
Oh god.
Yeah, like even with the blacked over, you don't get it to this extent. But like the thing of like the ear, like the finger missing was kind of like just like, oh shit, wake up without a finger and like a black mark on it. But the ear kind of collapsing into your man's head, the eye being sucked in, that was pretty horrific on the show. But again, it's a lot of it censored out. It's not nearly as bad as this comic.
But funnily enough, you get like glimpses of that in the opening animation when you like see Kitaro's like a glimpse of his origin, so to speak. Which is like involves a lot of similar things with a rotting face with an eye falling out of it.
So well known that they can't really deny it, so they just stick it in the opening.
They won't stump up for the good animation for that.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, yeah, that's pretty bad.
You just seen the pictures I linked to you of the anime version.
Yeah, the dude who looks like his fucking head melted off like wax. Yeah, that's not great.
The salary man didn't ever be the head of the company now, would he?
Well, I'm bummed.
The other thing they don't really get into is it appears that even though you completely melt away your footprint, you can still walk, because they find the first guy completely melted away, but then bloody footprints are still walking off.
Yeah, there's still some sort of gore of you left over. And like the two ghosts of them appearing, and in the vision, like the salaryman guy gives a stick of dynamite to the kid. It's like, destroy the rock once and for all. So there's still some essence of you left over, I guess, but whatever it is, it's a horrific one, yeah.
A ghost, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Some sort of gory ghost.
Next week it is, let me find what we got.
It's Karakasa's Umbrella Troubles.
Yeah, I suspect
that one. It seems like Kitaro's jacket gets robbed.
Yeah, and I think one of those umbrella yokais has robbed it, and he's going to go around punching people.
I think it's the same umbrella that we've seen before, no?
I was going to say, he's normally on the good guy's side, so...
Hmm, he's one of the guys from the... Isn't he from the yokai apartments, or...?
I believe so.
Yeah. He's been fooled by Ratman into going out and punching guys, because it'll make money for me somehow. we're going to videotape this, we're going to send it into the UFC, and we'll get you your debut.
Looking at the wiki, they've got episode titles all the way through to the end of September now.
Okay.
So it looks like we end with a two-part story about the final one of the four genders.
Oh, the actual plot in the commas.
The QB.
Then we get, week after next, we've got Yokai Ayami's Great Carnal Strategy. So, hopefully no relation to,
Utter Ayami.
Yes.
Oh, well, Tony Ratman is already Yokai Ayami, but what if Ayami died and came back as a Yokai?
I mean, like, over the course of Osamatsu, he definitely died several times, so, yeah, sure.
Back as a robot, came back as, well, didn't come back from that one serious story, but mostly came back.
Yeah.
Righty ho, that's it for this week's episode of Let's Go.
Well, I just wanted to say we actually did miss out Fruits Basket.
I did notice that, but I noticed Brian was flagging, so.
We can all say it for next week. Cause
no, you can carry on. Go ahead.
It was very slight anyway.
If you hear snoring, just wrap the episode up yourself.
Okay. You want to quickly run it? Or?
Yeah, I was doing well. I never backed down from a wave fight, an episode that could have, but I guess could not have been a bit shorter. Because I guess it wasn't a short enough story adjacent to this at this point in the comic that they could just like tag on for a second half.
Yeah, you'd have to do it as one half of an episode. But yeah, you'd have to have another half to work with.
Mm-hmm. Essentially, the mean girls who were part of the Prince Yuki Club, they want to try and like concoct a scheme to try and get that dang Toru Honda away from our Prince Yuki, because she's hanging around with him like their best friend or something like that. And also the other handsome boy who's his cousin or something like that.
It's like, okay, quick rule. They go through the rules of the Prince Yuki Club, and the rules are cockblock every other member and non-members from Yuki.
Yes.
I was like, that seems like a shitty club. You're just trying to make yourself and everyone else around you miserable? I don't know. That sounds bad to me. But that's basically the thing of it. Yeah. And they decide we can't get a Toru because she's protected by a powerful sorceress. They can handle the biker girl, because it's like, yeah, she's just in the material world. We just have to physically defeat her. But the one with mysterious powers, we need to find out her weakness. So two of the girls are sent on a recon mission to convince her to let her into the house, because they're writing an article for the school paper about waves. And so they're going to take a trip to her house and see if they can dig up some dirt in her.
Yeah, it's probably a normal house now, haunted mansion that they see in their nightmares. And come up come inside my house. Now, I must remind you, though, do not mention your names while you're inside these four walls. It's like, what is that supposed to mean?
Yeah, so she's gone off to make tea. They're rooting through her bedroom looking for, like, a diary or, like, an embarrassing poem or her knickers or something. Something that they could use as a thing against her.
Instead of finding her little brother hiding in the wardrobe.
Like a creep. not like a sexual pervert creep. Like a I am a fucking monster in a wardrobe kind of creep.
Oh, don't mind him. That's his Megami, my little brother. He just does it sometimes. Come out of Megami, will you? Like, oh, yes. Come out and have some tea. He's like, oh, it's nice tea we're having right here. Yes, it's very nice indeed.
You know, you're very like, no, we're not. I was like, do you have magical powers? Like, no, I don't have magical powers. Except the ability to curse people. And they're all like, oh, shit. I can only curse people if I know their name, though. So, actually, you guys didn't introduce yourselves to me. What was your name again? And they're like, oh, we gotta go. it doesn't quite work. And basically, one of them comes out and says it. Basically, what's your weakness? And do you have any weaknesses? And she admits to, yeah, I do have a weakness, actually. And they're like, oh, what is it? And she's like, okay, I see what this is. And she figures out their whole plan and kind of lays it out for them. And just talks about how it's mostly her little brother who brings it up that, it's like you guys are just being like shitty and selfish basically by not wanting happiness for the person you claim to fucking like and just obsessing about him, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And you're pushing your feelings onto him. You're just like, and that's like, you can't just like, push your gap intense level of emotion on somebody else because it might not be ready to accept it or want to accept it.
Yeah.
And that's just like, it's very fucking mean and stuff. It's awful. And it's really doing.
And like, obviously he scares them off by then saying all of their names. Isn't that right? Toko-chan or whatever the different girls' names.
Minami. Oh, we sound like, oh shit!
He knows our name, so we're fucked. So they all leg it out of the house. And with that, she kind of says to her brother, he's like, you know, you're right. Because earlier in the episode, she was like, hey, Toru, these dipshits are coming to my house and I'm going to beat them in a battle of waves. You want to come? And Toru's like, oh, I can't because I got work and these lads are coming over later. And she's like, oh, that's cool. Don't worry about it. But then she kind of states to her little brother, is like, you're right. I was being jealous a little as well that one of my best friends was kind of being taken away from me. But to be like that precious, where to not let her have her own happiness outside of you is shitty. And it's not being like a real friend. And it turned out Toru and, the other girl, did show up anyway. She called in and she's going to arrive late for work, kind of thing. And, They arrive anyway, and it's all good. And it's like she can still see that your friends do care about you, even when sometimes life happens and you can't make time for each other. And exactly. It was just nice. Yeah.
That's again a thing that I always like to enjoy hearing. This is constant like source of kind of guilt and anxiety and shame for me.
Yes.
I forget that I live in an entirely different country from a lot of people that I know, and they're not always like online or whatever like that.
Don't keep the same hours and whatever. Yeah. It happens.
So, you know, it's alright, but, you know, it's just, the kind of thing, you have the kind of friends where, no matter how long it's been, you know, you might, you know, one just, text each other, but that's why I haven't met in person, but when you do meet in person, when you do have a good long chat, it's like, pick up where you left off. There's no bad feeling about it. And that's like, Hannah Jim as well, he's kind of, I felt this a little bit, but, I know we're talking about Toru, like, she is, like, something I really care about is, considerate. Of my feelings too, as well, despite her coming over, which is, or trying to impart to these stuck up bitches.
Yeah, so it's a very simple plot and everything, and it's the lessons this time were like stuff that I do try and carry with me in life, but it's nice to kind of see them repeated, nice to kind of get validations, like, yeah, that's the right way to go about it. Don't be jealous of your friends' friendships and your friends' things outside of you, because that's just bad. That's bad-minded.
Yeah.
It also made me think of like people saying like, "Hey, calm down, worshiping Keanu Reeves and shit, guys."
Definitely.
He's got his own shit. It reminded me of that shit because that's happening a lot lately. Not just with Keanu Reeves, but you know, any celebrity or anything like that.
Well, that's as well like anybody else there, like pushing, they're not in love with the actual person, they're in love with their ideal of them.
And, exactly, yeah.
And then as soon as they let you down and they make like a human error or mistake, then they're cancelled, they're dead to you. That's where that intensity can go to. You got to everyone be measured about it and be considerate of who they are and what they actually, especially with like celebrities and people you might know online, you don't know them in person as a person. So when they do something that's let you down, don't take it as some kind of marker in itself. Like, I was an idiot to like that person. I'm an idiot.
And like I said, these girls have met a club that basically like tries to stop any of them or their friends or people outside of their club from enjoying the thing they enjoy or getting closer or liking the thing or interacting with the thing that they love, presumably, or they claim to love anyway. And it's like, that's just a way of making you and everyone else around you miserable, which again, very online.
Yes, very online. And very anime fan as well. From Kill Rock go, it's you. It was fine. It was still like a bit too long. It should have been like a half episode really, because it was really drawn out.
Yeah, you could have made this like a really good tight half an episode.
Yeah, we're reiterating their plan. It's a little bit like Hanajima is definitely like more of a supporting character. When you kind of put her into like a whole episode, like, mostly by herself, or because half the episode she's just kind of there. It's more revolving around those girls.
I did like her like at the end, like realizing the similarities that her and these fucking mean girls have, and like rising above that. That was a nice bit, but it's not so much character growth of her realizing just to be the thing that she already was at the start of the episode.
Yes, exactly.
Even with that kind of weakness as an episode, it's still quite good. It's still quite enjoyable. Good message as well. All good.
Still there, Brian?
I'm still here, yes.
<He's> fading away.
We're good, we're good.
Wrapping the light.
So that actually ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Before we say goodnight, let's find out what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Mathis Dynamite in the Brain.
By the time you hear this, all going well, hopefully if the heat dies down, so it's better for this recording. Heroes go on a bit about a thief and a cobbler, which is like a lot more of no digging. Well, I kind of knew that going in, but
yeah,
there's a lot of pour over there because the film that's been developed for that long has got a lot of stories attached to it, and I did get a bit deeper into them, but also didn't ever have time or the physical capacity to do it in. So
talking about the thing itself and wouldn't take as long. Though I would like to go into detail with it, but talking about the background behind it is like, okay, we're talking about fucking decades here, so we gotta break this down a little.
There are things like orbiting around us, you know, kind of what we did, or we talked about The Emperor's New Groove. The stories surrounding the making of that film turned out to be the more interesting thing to discuss, overall. So I feel that's going to be definitely the case with Thief and the Cobbler, is notorious, legendary, one might say, for its status as being one of the longest, things ever produced.
I think it holds the record for it. Yeah. But
hopefully it won't be long a show we've ever produced either. But
that's the other thing. Yeah,
we'll find that out on recording day.
Hmm.
Sorry, I just got distracted there for a moment. Coming up on Dynamite in the Brain, we've put out all the episodes we've recorded, so we're gonna have to record another one, which at this point is planned to be Fujiko Mine's Lie.
Oh.
I do.
Is that out already? What?
Yep.
Huh. That's me, right? It's
out via the evil powers of the internet, that is for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, but even then, it's almost like a little bit away. Just kind of snuck out there, didn't it? Like Fujiko herself.
Gotta make sure you gotta have those RSS feeds set up so these things don't escape your notice.
Or you can just tell me and now I know.
Yes.
my BSS feed.
Rightio, we'll speak to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Good evening.